Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte. When not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, restaurateurs, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today, we have the Toast and Tailgate episode. First up, former editor at Tasting Table and award-winning cookbook author Raquel Pelzel talks about her brand newest book, Toast, and the international evolution of this perfect dish with renditions, Aussie, English, and Malaysian, and more. Then we'll welcome Lynn Ryan, friend to chefs and a chef herself. She's the founder of Tailgate Buzz and the Chefs to Dine For dinner series. Plus, she's the first lady of the Culinary Institute of America. She'll share sassy Southern lady tips on how to be good at life and how to do birthday parties and road trips right. With that, I'm so pleased to welcome people we like. Welcome, Raquel.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Loving the book. I'm holding it here in my hand. It's got like the perfect toast-like kind of feel to it, where it's not overly twee is a word that you like to use, but has a bit of rustic madness. It's toast for everybody.
It is toast for all. It's kind of, Evan Sung shot the book. He's a New York-based photographer, and he did such a great job at making the toasts really pop out. And we tried really hard to make them, you know, like you just want to kind of stick a fork right in that photo. So, you know, not too precious, because it's toast. And that's part of the appeal, is that everyone can make it out of almost anything.
So toast, it's like one half of a sandwich. It's a piece of bread with stuff on it. And like, why toast?
Stuff on bread. Why toast? I don't know. I mean, toast has kind of in the past, I don't know, I guess 5 to 7 years kind of taken New York City by storm. It started, I mean, we've all been making cinnamon toast for ages and ages, and it's one of the few toasts that my mom could make me as a little girl. My mom was a horrible cook and burnt down her kitchen and, like, you know, could set things on fire. But she made all right cinnamon toast.
Wait, she burned down your kitchen?
She burned down, yeah, not my kitchen, her kitchen. But yeah, okay. She burned down her kitchen. Yeah, that's just, you know, one of many instances where chaos has happened. But I mean, if you go like back into Australia, you can trace the beginnings of avocado toast, which is now, what isn't that like the most Instagrammed food pick in the history of the universe?
It's pretty foodie. Yeah.
There's the coconut jam toast from Malaysia. There's kind of a riff on that, where people toast bread and then just put condensed milk on it and then put it back under the broiler, and it's kind of like a quick hack. Super good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, beans on toast from England. There's a cheese toast in Israel, kind of like a grilled cheesy version.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a fun way for chefs to deliver almost like a composed salad, where you have a balance of you know, temperatures and textures and sweetness and pickles and creamy and crunchy. And then you have the crunch of the toast, and it's like saturated with olive oil or butter and a little salt, and just kind of perfection. And you eat it with a fork and knife, so you feel it's a little bit more upscale or center plate or sophisticated, you know, to serve at a dinner party or eat at a restaurant, rather than like an open face sandwich, which is just kind of, you know, like deli turkey on bread.
Wait, so what actually happened that one time your mom burned down her kitchen?
Oh, she, okay, so she, it was not while making toast. She was cooking something on the stovetop. I think she was like frying schnitzel, and then she took the dog for a walk, and she forgot to turn off the pan with the oil. Yeah. I grew up on like lean cuisine and Hot Pockets and, you know, Dinty Moore beef stew. So Learning to cook for myself was kind of a matter of survival.
So then what happened to the, like, what, did, was everyone okay? There was
everyone was fine. Yeah. No, everyone was okay. She came back, like, things were on fire. Fire department came. She got her kitchen redone. She was pretty happy about it, actually.
Well, that's one way to do it.
Yeah, I suppose.
So what's your, I'm when it comes to, let's say, ice cream sandwiches, other dishes that have things on things, I have a very particular preference for the right ice cream to sandwich outside cookie ratio. Uh-huh. I'm like a big, like, ice cream hoarder, and I want more ice cream. Okay. In my ice cream sandwich. So what's your ideal, like, toast to stuff on it ratio?
Toast to toppings?
Yeah.
I think it depends on the topping. I mean, I have some toppings in the book that are super, super flavorful. Like, for example, I have a s'more toast with a homemade Jandia. Mm. And that, you don't need a lot. Like, a little of that chocolatey hazelnut deliciousness goes a long way. I do, like, a romesco toast with some garlicky kale or mustard greens on top. And there's a little bit more of the romesco because, you know, you can do a little bit more of that. But then there's other toasts where it's like a thin, you know, a swipe of ricotta that's sweetened with maybe some sugar and rose water. And I think it's just a balance between the creamy element, whatever your spread is, and then whatever's going to be your topping. And then, of course, it just depends on how starving you are and how indulgent you want to be.
So in my world, I kind of get greedy with the toppings, and I'll just, like, eat a bunch of topping and then, yeah, like, have a couple bites of toast, but just eat a bunch of toppings.
Yeah, totally.
I'm very, like, juicy, saucy, topping, nutty. So yeah. You had a ton of incredible chefs from around the world contribute some toast recipes to the book.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Myself and my editor at Fiden, Emily Takutis and Olga Masov, who are both amazing ladies, we put our heads together, and because Fiden is distributed around the world, it was really important to us to include some chefs that weren't based in the States. So we have Bill Granger from Australia, we have Fergus Henderson from London, we have Sarit and Itamar from Honey & Co. also in London. It was really nice to get their perspectives on toast too, because it's not necessarily what you might find in the U.S. Like Bill's recipe, he did this really delicious take on a tuna melt. And he took tuna and then he tossed in some aged mozzarella and then fresh mozzarella, and then he threw it under the broiler for a little bit, and it's like the two different textures of mozzarella give two totally contrasting, you know, spins on it. And it's just really fresh. And he did, I think it was like a parsley kind of caper vinaigrette to drizzle over the top. And it was just so vibrant and bright. And then, you know, Fergus's recipe, on the other hand, was like really, you know, unctuous. And it was like marrow and beef mince on toast. And it's so English. you know, and then Itamar and Sarit, they gave me this beautiful chopped liver toast with some sumac and hard-boiled eggs, kind of like your Jewish deli holiday toast made 100,000 times better.
And I'm so, like, I'm, like, kind of, like, wide-eyed looking at you describing all these toasts and all the ingredients and all the flavors and textures. You know how sometimes in life where you have one experience and it kind of changes the way you look at the world? Yesterday, I did an on-camera interview for one of those competition shows to be, like, an expert or a guest judge. Uh-huh. And it was just such an interesting experience because you get asked these questions where you're like, I know I love food. I know food. But, boy, to talk about food nonstop and for, yeah, like, an hour, it was very interesting.
Get hungry.
Yeah. And now I have, like, this little, like, color palette in my head of, like, flavors.
Yeah.
So toast, very foodie. People are obsessed with it. What kind of pulling up, like, what is it about toast or other foods that makes it, like, millennial ready or trend ready?
That's a good question. I think with toast, it's just so fun. I mean, I think the first kind of high-end restaurant-y toast I ever had was at ABC Kitchen. Dan Kluger kind of popularized that insanely delicious squash toast. So good. And
you have a personal connection to the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right?
To where ABC
yeah.
is. Yeah. So the story behind that and how I got to know Dan is that I have these retina issues. It's not very sexy toast talk. I have retina issues. And I used to have to get my eyes like super dilated and I would stumble around and not be able to see. And so I was like, well, I can't do anything. And I don't want to get on the subway and not be able to see because that kind of freaked me out. So I was like, I'm just going to go eat. And I know Dan has a toast on the menu and I know it'll be good. And I know I don't have to read the menu. So I would just like sit at the bar and order a toast. And then he contributed a toast to the book. So it was really nice. But I think, you know, you order a toast and it's like the perfect size and it's not too carby and it's not too overwhelming. And it's got exactly what you're talking about, that crunch to creamy component. And you can really, I mean, what chefs do, and I mean, what I did in the book is you can go kind of crazy and have a lot of fun with the toppings. There's no rules, mm-hmm. anything. I mean, I have an ice cream top toast. I have a Danish rye meatball toast I have a fried onion toast with roast beef. I have a pepperoni butter toast. Like, it's just, you could do anything. It's really liberating and fun. And I think what makes it transferable from restaurants to home, to a home, like a home kitchen, mm-hmm. is that, you can take the most simple ingredients and instantly make them seem super fancy. So, you know, like if you have a little nice butter and then, you know, maybe some beautiful salad greens from the farmer's market and you like dress them with some radishes and you put it on top of a toast, all of a sudden it's not a small salad with a piece of bread on the side. It's like a composed dish and feels special, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also very photogenic always.
Totally, it's beautiful.
Have you actually had the Taiwanese version of the coconut butter toast? I know that that's like it turns up Malaysian in the book because we are all the same and we're all the same, but different. Different. But have you had that?
I haven't. I have never had it. I have had the Malaysian version. I've had a Thai version, but I've never had the Taiwanese version.
Do you know what page that Malaysian one is on here?
Well, I just briefly mention it in the book. There's one I do with like a lemongrass syrup and ice cream, but I didn't do a take on it.
Okay.
So that could be in toast too.
Yeah, because the way it looks and feels, it's like this massively thick. It looks more like a brick. It's mm-hmm. like brick toast. It's called brick toast.
Oh, okay.
And you have it at bubble tea shops with like the Taiwanese beef noodle soup and all the like salt and pepper and basil fried chicken bits and just all this like shaved ice and stuff that just makes little Asian kids and also Asian adults happy. And then brick toast. Drizzled Ooh. With like all that brûlée.
Yum.
You know. Ugh,
maybe you could do that for your like Taiwanese noodle pop-up.
Yeah, okay. So do you want to do the toast part?
I'll do a brick toast.
Okay, oh my God. That would make me so
synergy
happy.
Yay.
And then we'll find a bubble tea company. I've got some matcha friends.
That'd be super fun.
Okay. It's a night market in New York City. What are three tips that are unexpected for home toast makers?
Well, one tip is, I don't actually own a toaster, which people are like, what? You wrote a toast book, you don't have a toaster. I live in New York and in Brooklyn, I have a teeny itty bitty kitchen. So I use my broiler to make toast all the time and I like the singed edges it offers. So don't think that you need a toaster to make toast. In fact, I think some of the best toasts come out of the broiler. Also a skillet to, pan fry toast in butter or olive oil. And actually that's the secret behind lots of restaurant toasts when they get that amazing, like crispy. Be crunchy, you know, pockets of olive oil in the bread.
Mm.
It's because they're frying that toast in like a quarter cup of oil. You know? So that's to treat the bread with special attention and to season the bread with salt before you put the toppings on.
Okay.
To season every layer. And then I think also just have a balance of, you know, crunchy to creamy, whether it's a savory or sweet toast. Like on the ice cream toast, I kind of brulee that piece of bread I soak it in sugar syrup and then I dip it in sugar and then I pan sear it. So it gets kind of crispy around the edges and all sugary. And then the ice cream just kind of melts into it. And then I think I threw some nuts on there. It's just like, you want textures. You want lots of different temperatures and textures and components that come together to make it more complex than just, you know, almond butter and apples on toast, which is also delicious. But
did you get tired of toast testing for the book?
No, I didn't get tired. I mean, my kids, I have two boys and they got tired of toast. They're like, can we stop eating dinner on bread, please? So they kind of maxed out on their toast capacity. But, you know, I ordered a toast actually this morning for breakfast at my little cafe in my neighborhood in Clinton Hill, Primrose. I got an avocado toast. So
do you now, like, look at the world through toast-colored glasses, like toast-framed glasses?
Well, I don't. You know what I do is kind of. I think I look at my fridge in toast glasses, because sometimes when I have the littlest bit of something left over, like a little bit of roasted veg or a little bit of you know, braised lamb from. I worked on this lamb project for the American Lamb Board where I cooked like 60 pounds of lamb in 10 days. You could take a little bit of something and put it on toast, and it becomes something completely different and thoughtful and composed and intentional, mm-hmm. rather than just, you know, putting lamb on a sandwich, or I don't know, it just seems a little more special. So I think I waste less because I put it, and then you could take day-old bread or two-day-old bread or three-day-old bread if you get it from somewhere great, and, mm-hmm. and add your leftovers to it. And, like, you have something you could serve at a lunch or brunch or dinner or whatever. Three in the morning after going out.
Yum. So kind of a nerdy question. Do we know the origin of toast? The first man who did the first toast?
Cave toast. I don't know. Gosh, I don't know. That's a good question. Right? The origin of toast.
Yeah.
I mean, origin of bread is Egypt. And I'm sure someone put bread over fire at some point. So maybe it goes back to the Middle East and... You know, ancient spelt bread or something like that.
Yeah, you know
like
what?
That.
The fact that toast has all this fancy stuff on it these days made me forget that it's actually, the bread is toasted. It's not actually some kind of fancy millennial food with stuff on a really artisanal piece of bread.
Right. I mean, you could toast, like, I have a fried chicken toast in the book, and it's kind of, you know, a little trashy, super delicious. It's like fried chicken tossed with this sticky, sweet Sichuan sauce, a little spicy. And then I take mayonnaise and I slather it on sliced white bread and then toast it. And it's just like ridiculous. It's so good.
So next books that you're working on that we can look for from you.
Yeah, well, I wrote the Numpong book with Ben Dates and Ratha Chaupoli. That's coming out in May. That's going to be... It's gorgeous. It's so cool. It has some original art from the guy Serve who does all their graffiti in the restaurants. And it's just beautiful. And the food's like amazing. My little boy Julian calls this one sauce in particular, this peppercorn sauce. He's like, magic sauce. I want magic sauce on my fish, because he thinks it tastes like magic because it's so good.
That's adorable.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was fun testing those recipes. So Numpong's coming out in May 2016. I'm working on a book for Shortstack, which I can't divulge the ingredient, but I'm hard at work on that, and that's coming out next year. I'm working with Sadella Marley, who's Bob Marley's daughter, on an edibles book, which is a whole new path for me. That's coming out. I think it's going to come out in like a year or two under Pam Krause's imprint at Penguin Random House. I'm working on a book with Alicia Silverstone that's going to come out through Rodale, and a book with Uri Schecht of Breads here in New York City, the amazing bakery right off of Union Square. He has a kiosk in, I think, in the 40s at Bryant Park, and a new one opening in the Upper West Side. And he's like Mr. Babka and challah. His stuff is like so delicious.
More carbs.
More carbs. Carbs and carbs.
Last question on toast. How do people react when you tell them you have a toast book now?
Well, I think what my family is like, what? What are you talking about, toast? I think people who live in the big food cities, you know, Chicago, San Francisco, New York, they get toast. Portland. I mean, you know, like, I think toast is working its way into the center of the country. And actually, you know, my mom ordered a toast at a restaurant like maybe a month ago and sent me a photo on my phone. And she's like, look, I understand toast now. I ordered toast at a restaurant. And it was, you know, 45 minutes outside Chicago in the suburbs. So it's getting, I think people are starting to understand it more. And what's exciting about it is that while we've had toast in New York City for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, it's still like super new in other cities and really happening. And it's always delicious. It's so good.
Thank you so much, Raquel.
Yeah, sure.
Raquel Pelzel, author of Toast, the Cookbook. After this brief commercial break, we will welcome Lynn Ryan, chef and tailgate expert. Stay tuned.
If I had a magic wand, tomorrow everyone in the world would have enough food to eat that was culturally appropriate and delicious. The planet would be thriving because all the food would have been grown and produced in a way that sustains us, both our bodies and our world. But man, I do not have a magic wand. What I do have is you and this radio station, the Heritage Radio Network. That's what we're here to do. We're here to help lead the way to a future that's more delicious, that's more fun, where we're healthier, where the planet's healthier, and we want you to be a part of that. We can't do it without you. As a nonprofit radio station, we depend on the support of our listeners. So take a minute out of your day, visit the website, and click the big beating donate tab. Throw us a few bucks. Every bit helps. We're counting on you.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on Heritage Radio Network. If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at Leyte Su, that's L-E-I-T-I-H-S-U. We're at Heritage_radio. And the show hashtag is WOMSHOW, W-O-M-S-H-O-W, short for Word of Mouth. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. By the way, if you do love Word of Mouth, do review and rate the show. And then if you hate the show, you can keep that your own dirty little secret. So we have here live in studio Lynn Ryan.
Yay.
Hello.
Hi, lady. How are you?
Very good. Lynn is the first lady of the CIA. She's the founder of Chefs to Dine For, the founder of Tailgate Buzz. She is working on a tailgate cookbook, and she's also one of the best empowerers of the chefs and food friends around us that I know.
Thank you.
So welcome to Bushwick. You had a pizza out there.
Yes.
How was it?
Delicious. First time in Bushwick.
Oh, you're now officially a hipster.
Oh, okay.
You just got back from Italy.
Yes. Wonderful trip.
What was going on out there?
I took my daughter. I have three kids. I took my daughter over for her. She's studying in Italy for her year abroad. And I also took my mom. So it was three generations. And we had a lovely, lovely time.
What did you do?
We ate a lot. I met for the first time in person Faith Willinger, who is really the dom of Italian cuisine over there.
Wow.
And went to her house, went out to eat with her. She introduced me to some people, and I really followed a lot of her recommendations for eating. So we traveled a lot, saw a lot, ate a lot.
Favorite bite?
That is hard. Probably the pizza at the Mercato in Florence. Uh-huh. It was really good. And she told me, just wait until this pizza maker gets back. If they say he's not there right now, you wait on him. So we did, and it was wonderful.
Pizza the way sushi is, where it really matters whose hands are touching it.
Exactly.
What made this pizza so world class?
I can't say anything to describe how it was different. It was just perfect and delicious. I mean, it was simple. It was just a simple pizza, but the way it was made, I don't know if it's the flour, the water, his hands, the oven, whatever it is, but it was just perfect and delicious.
Tip taken. You do this dinner series called Chefs to Dine For.
Yes.
And while there are a lot of dinner series out there, a lot of events to go to, I think yours is kind of another level because you're the host.
Mine is different. I've been to a couple of them out there, and they're all great. And, you know, you have to find the one that's right for you. Also, a lot of restaurants do them themselves. But when you come to one of my dinners, it's like you're a guest at my table with me at this restaurant. And I only do restaurants where I personally know the chefs. And I tell you some funny things about them sometime. You get to know them better. You get to, meet them during the cocktail party, have your picture taken, get your book signed. But it's really like a community of people sitting down having dinner. It's people who love food. If they didn't, they, you know, wouldn't come to these dinners. They either love the chef, love restaurants, love food, and hopefully all of the above. So a lot of people keep coming back because they enjoy the people they meet at the dinners.
And they're welcomed as friends and family.
Exactly.
Tell me about some of the chefs that that you've featured in Chefs to Dine For.
It started out with Charlie Palmer, mm-hmm. who I like to say Charlie Palmer's my BFF chef. love him. He did a great job and really helped me start it. I was kind of insecure, you know, about starting this when I did. And his staff was great. They were wonderful helping me. They even helped promote it. And so this is going to be for our four-year anniversary, kicking off our fifth year.
Wow.
And we're going to have the one in October at Charlie Palmer's. And by the way, I have four seats left for Tuesday night at Birds and Bubbles with Sarah Simmons.
Next Tuesday night.
Next Tuesday, the 29th.
Chefs to Dine For is the URL, right? .com?
Yes, that's correct.
And chefs are not only featured, but then they're also in at the dinner table with us.
They are. They come out, they talk to you, they explain the courses. There are no formal speeches. I do stand up at the beginning of the dinner and introduce the chef, but it's not like going to a banquet or something like that. It's really you're being friends with these people. And a lot of the guests, you know, come back again to that restaurant because they felt so comfortable when they were there, and maybe they were intimidated. I like to do it at a mix of restaurants, some high-end, some that are not as high-end, but that are all unique and different.
So you are the ultimate Southern hostess with the mostess.
Oh,
many
you.
You've even match made, by the way, your own mother.
Yes, that's true.
Your mother's current husband is somebody that you introduced her to.
No, she is not married. No, her husband of 18 years, he passed away.
Oh, okay.
But my stepfather, I did introduce her to.
How did you make that happen?
He was, it's a long story, but he was a neighbor of a friend, and he also was in the restaurant industry. He was retired Navy and working in the restaurant industry, and I just helped set them up to go out on a date, and at first my mom didn't like him. So I said, okay, well, invite him over because I'm having a little dinner party, and there'll be other women there. Maybe they will like him. And then she decided she liked him, and they were married less than a year later.
How many couples have you set up?
I have 21 and a half marriages on the credit.
Oh my God. I'm still waiting for my dream boat. Okay.
I have to, you know, sometimes it just happens. One time this girl was interviewing me for a job. I had not seen this man in 10 years, and he popped into my head, and I'm like, hey, are you married? And she said, no, looking at me strangely because we're on a job interview. And they got together, and they're still together. So
you play a key role at the CIA as the sort of official, unofficial first lady of this incredible school. By the way, the CIA Culinary Institute of America, not the other one. It's always very confusing when I walk between food and non-food worlds. And you and Tim live on the sprawling campus.
Yes.
In a house over tucked away in the woods kind of thing. What is that life like? Like, what has it been like raising your kids on a college campus, essentially?
It was hard at the beginning raising the kids there. I mean, it's a beautiful home, beautiful campus, lovely. It is overlooking the Hudson River on the cliffs. So that's really nice. But it was hard. Our kids were 5 and 6 years old when we moved there. And to be surrounded by students and not have any children that are your neighbors was a big change for them. And it was a big change for me because I had to drive them everywhere.
Yeah. And you and Tim have been married, madly in love for many, many years.
26 years we've been married.
How did you first meet him?
We met at a chef's convention, American Culinary Federation convention. We were both dating other people, and went out to look around, wasn't paying attention, ran into him, dropped everything, He helped me pick it up.
You actually dropped everything.
I actually did drop it on the floor and didn't even look at him. And he spoke to me and said, "Didn't you graduate from the culinary?" And I said, "Yes, I did. And I am a chef," and blah, 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 blah. Because I was pretty young at the time. I was 24. And there were a lot of older men there that were kind of saying, "Oh, what do you do? What are you selling? Whose wife are you?" And I'm like, "I'm a chef."
Yeah. So then what happened?
We went to dinner that night with some other people. There was a group of younger chefs, not a lot, but a group of some younger chefs who were there. And we went out. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina, which I love Charlotte, North Carolina, and would have named my daughter Charlotte, but I have a cousin named Charlotte, so I didn't want to take her name. But, you know, it was the worst conference ever. The chef quit in the middle of it. There was no food. It was like, and let me say, the American Culinary Federation has recovered from that and is a great organization. Now, so.
Always the diplomatic one.
Yes.
Well, at first you were a little skeptical of Tim because, again, you were this young lady and he's like,
"Are you going to make me tell that story?"
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
So we are riding in the cab to the restaurant because no one is downstairs. Everyone stays in the same hotel. No one's down there that is going to this dinner. And we ride in the car over together. And I'm hugging the wall of the cab, the door. And he says, "Is something wrong?" And I'm like, "Yes. Are you married?" Because he had gray hair. He was 30, but he had gray hair. He always has had gray hair. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm in a strange town and riding in a taxi with a man. Remember, I'm from Alabama. Mm. So I'm, you know, going to dinner with this man I don't know. And what if it's just he and I? What if he's married? I have no idea. So he laughed and said no. And he said, "Why? Are you married?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Why not?" And I said, "Well, I haven't found a man that can buy me a diamond big enough." So, can you cuss on air?
Absolutely.
Oh, so my husband can never say I was a bitch because I was a bitch the first time he met me. So he can never say it was like a surprise or anything. So he asked, "Well, what do you want?" And I said, "Well, all the women in my family have big diamonds, and I would accept nothing less than a 3-carat heart-shaped diamond." So, ta-da. So it's kind of an embarrassing story, but
it's absolutely adorable. And Lynn, you just inspire me to reach new heights.
Oh, good.
Always. So tailgating is like a thing that I guess before I met you, and because I'm not from the South, I didn't realize it was such a thing.
Oh, it's a big thing. It's a really big thing. I mean, people arrange. There are virtually no weddings in the South in the fall. You plan them around the SEC games, and SEC being Southeastern Conference. Tailgating is really big across the nation. I mean, the South doesn't own it, but it is really big in the South, and it's really varying degrees of fancy to non-fancy, to just popping open a beer, to having a chandelier in your tent.
Right. Okay. So what makes a tailgate successful in your mind?
The same thing that makes a dinner party successful. Everyone having a good time, being organized, you know, just like cooking, being organized is the key. Having everything labeled, having everything ready to go, giving everyone a job to do beforehand. Because, you know, some people can't cook, bless their hearts. And those people can bring ice and beer or champagne or, you know, there's always something. But I think you kind of, you really have to be organized, just like when you're doing a party.
There is an art to the packing of everything into the car to go to the place, right?
Yes, very much so.
Tips on that?
Ice, and more ice. It's ice, baby, when you're tailgating. And if your school allows it, some do not, but if you're, you know, the place where you're tailgating allows it, grill is always, you should always think about things you can heat up on a grill. Some people use Sterno, some people even bring those little induction burners, but really, the most important thing is, if you're allowed to cook there, to bring a grill that's reliable and that you have the charcoal or the wood or whatever you're using for, and know how to dispose of it, how to dispose of the contents before you leave.
What has been the most insanely elaborate tailgate party that you've planned or participated in?
Oh, there have been some great ones. I've been fortunate enough to go to the Super Bowl a couple of times. My husband's a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Mm-hmm. Even on our vacation this summer, we went to Pittsburgh Steelers training camp. And I'm a huge University of Alabama, Roll Tide, fan. So, you know, he goes to the ball games with me and I'll go to the ball games with him. But I have to say, the best tailgating is really, I think, on the college level. Of course, it's very professional on the for the pro circuit at the Super Bowl, but most of the pro games I've been to, the tailgating in the parking lots is no comparison to what we do down south at college football.
So what are some, describe, like, what are some setups, some features of these parties?
Oh, well, number one, the tents are very elaborate. People, you know, it's not just your average white tent usually. And if it is, if that's what it has to be, then people will hang curtains. They will hang chandeliers that are, you know, that you don't have to plug in, that are run on batteries. They're silver. There's different levels of table. There's gorgeous flowers. There's usually a champagne fountain, you know, like you have at weddings. So people go all out, and people really dress up. Most of the schools I've been to in Southeastern Conference, people dress up, but people really, I'm sure you saw my Facebook picture this weekend of my son and my friends. I don't care if it's 110 degrees. If you're a young man at the University of Alabama, you are probably wearing, or if you're in a fraternity, you are wearing a jacket and a tie.
And how about for ladies?
Ladies, sundresses, jewelry, heels.
Hats. Wow.
Yeah.
So going on road trips with you and Tim, your husband, that's kind of do you guys do road trips in a different way?
We do.
Okay.
So our trips are based around food. Every trip we take is based around food. We try to take our kids somewhere, like a big trip every other year, every 2 years. We went to Africa last summer because we have a son from Africa and did some safaris, it was a really nice trip, but even that was based around food. We chose the safaris that had the best food. We planned all the restaurants. One of the restaurants we ate in just is in the 50 top restaurants in the world.
Now, in Africa?
In Africa, in South Africa.
What's it
in
called?
Cape Town. The Test Kitchen.
Hmm.
So it was before it was so famous, but we do our research. And so this summer I had an operation where I couldn't fly for 6 weeks, and my husband planned a road trip. And so because there are so many chefs that we love and their restaurants are far away, like we have their food when they come to New York and cook it, or we have it at other places, but we haven't been to their original restaurants. So we drove to Maine. We went to see Melissa Kelly, who we love. Melissa and I were both students at the same time and knew each other at the culinary. And so that was awesome, this trip to Maine. I had been to Maine, but never been to Maine. And I love Maine now. I'm a huge advocate. And then we went down to see Patrick O'Connell in at Little Washington. I mean, I've had Patrick's food at other places, but to have it at the Inn at Little Washington is something so special. Mm-hmm. We saw Jose Andreas. We went to Pittsburgh, which is my husband's hometown, mm-hmm. and there's a lot happening with food. A lot of people say Pittsburgh's going to be the next destination, food destination. So we went to Cure. We went to a Mexican restaurant that I can't think of the name of right now, but it was really cool. We went to an artisanal bread baker. We had someone who makes the best cake, this burnt almond cake. We just, you know, went around to a lot of places. Then we went to my favorite, Farmer Lee Jones. We went out, yay, to Ohio to the chef's garden, and Jamie Simpson cooked a beautiful meal. It was so wonderful. And we ended the trip by visiting with Tim's family from Pittsburgh who were in Lake Erie. And so I had chicken wings on my birthday at a fireman's, I don't know what you call it, like a VFW kind of thing. But because I like to have something fancy, I brought the little flowers from the chef's garden, the edible flowers, and sprinkled them on everyone's chicken wings. So it was really nice.
So a fireman's what?
It's like a VFW or something, you know, like a fireman's hall. Like, you have to be a fireman to be a member, and a lot of Tim's family members in Pittsburgh are firemen.
Oh, so it's where firemen go eat.
It's like where firemen, yeah, it's a private club for firemen.
And well, don't mind if I do.
They're hot.
See, let's talk about that one really surprisingly epic birthday party that you had.
Oh, yeah, my 50th. It was pretty special, and it was last minute.
Yeah.
It was really like we were going out to eat at the Nomad, which is one of my favorite restaurants here in New York, and Thomas Keller, who's a board member of my husband's, happened to call on the phone, and he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "We're going out. We're going to the city for Lynn's birthday." He's like, "Oh, you're not coming to Per Se?" And Tim's like, "No, we're taking the kids. You know, we have a daughter who eats 9 things, so we knew she could eat chicken and no man." And so Tim said, "Come out and have a drink with us later." And then it like snowballed into this. People saying happy birthday, and I'm like, "Oh, come have a drink with us." So we went next door to April Bloomfield's place, mm-hmm. and it turned into this major chef's party. So it was really
who came?
Daniel Blue, Thomas Keller, Eli Kamei. People came that I didn't even know. Sarah Simmons was there. Let's see who else chef was: Charlie Palmer, David Burke, Tony Fortuna. I didn't look at the pictures.
You can't make this stuff up.
But it was really fun. And so afterwards, after they closed the Breslin, then we went to David Burke's restaurant where they were closing up DB Kitchen, and knocked on the door, and they're like, we're closed. And he's like, "But I'm David Burke." So we went in there and partied till 4 a.m. The Men Who Dine, Gennaro and Alan were there.
Yeah.
My friend Lorraine. There, it was a fun party.
I have been out until like 3 in the morning with you and Tim and friends, and this is actually for real.
Yeah, J.G. Mellon's is a happening place at 4 a.m.
Delicious.
Yes.
So you have this interesting role where you have your family, you have your projects, and then you're also supporting Tim and the school. And, you know, as you navigate all of these incredibly important responsibilities, how are you kind of maintaining your own identity while, you know, I guess staying married for a long time?
Well, I have a lot of friends, and some people don't even know who Tim is. Don't even, you know, it's not like of course I love Tim. We've been married for 26 years. Yeah. He's great. But, you know, it's not the only thing in my life. I have a full life. I have 3 kids and mm-hmm. 3 different colleges on 3 different coasts. And now my daughter in Italy. And I go to Alabama a lot. You know, there are a lot of people that don't have any idea about my life at the culinary. Mm-hmm. I have my own Chefs to Dine for, and that's really great. And that, you know, it crosses lines sometimes because it's about chefs, but I'm able to maintain a pretty good life that is not, you know, I know when I have to be at the culinary, like tomorrow night's graduation, mm-hmm. progressive dinner. So every 3 weeks, I know that I'm committed to doing this. And it's not something I have to do, but it's something I enjoy doing. And I feel like I get to do it.
You gave me some really great advice about how it's woman advice, like how to be good to your husband.
Yes.
Can we share it with all of our listeners? Because it's something that is, it's not necessarily, you do it in such a modern way, and I just think it's really cool.
Oh, well, I don't know. Do men listen to this show? I don't know if we want to give away these secrets.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, there are ways to be good to your husband and still be good to yourself. I mean, I came into this marriage with my own money and not dependent on my husband. So that's always a good start to a marriage when you have your own thing. I think it's always very important for women to have something that's just theirs. A lot of young women ask me about stopping working when they have children. I think being a mom is like the most special, important thing in the world. But I think you should never give up working completely. Mm-hmm. Even if you only work 1 hour a week, if you're writing a column, if you're contributing something, even if you're volunteering, even if it's not work that you get paid for, do something that is just for yourself. Please don't give up your identity. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to do that to be a good mom. Mm-hmm. So that's an important mom tip. As far as being a good wife, men are pretty simple, and they really do. If you listen to a man, he tells you what he wants. And if you, it's kind of like kids, if you repeat it back to them, most men want to hear that they've worked hard, that you appreciate them, that they're a good dad, they're a good husband. But I would say the primary thing is men like to hear that you appreciate how hard they work. Women like to hear that also, but
men more.
You know, that's, yeah, I think that men really like to hear that. And if you, you know, repeat that stuff back to them, like, I appreciate how much you do for a family, even when you're mad at him, even when he didn't take out the garbage today or he didn't remember to pick something up, you know, remember to be kind to each other, because hopefully in a marriage, you want to stay married to this person for a long time. And, my mom has the best piece of advice. It's forget being in love. You know how when you meet somebody at first and you're just madly in love with them and they're all you can think about and it's wonderful? Well, let me tell you, every day is not going to be like that. So forget being in love. Marry someone you can stand. Marry someone that you really like and respect, because that's so much more important than that intense love that comes and goes. Of course, you always love them, but
wow, I love that. And the advice is just be nice and be kind, which I dig. Yes. Last two questions for you. Dream job. If you were not doing everything that you're doing now, you already get to do everything that, I mean, I want to be you when I grow up. So just like if you couldn't cook, if you didn't have an incredible palate.
I guess, world traveler, which is what I already get to do a lot of. But I mean, I think if my dream job would be to write about travel and take people on trips, even.
Fabulous. And last but not least, let's give the update on the Women Chefs and Restaurateurs. Shout out, yes, to Elizabeth Faulkner, our friend.
Yay. Yes, I texted with Elizabeth this morning. And we're seeing Antoinette tonight for dinner. So Women Chefs and Restaurateurs is a great organization. It is not just for women. Let me say that first off. We give a lot of scholarships. It is a great organization to be involved with, to empower everyone, you know, to make you feel good about what you're doing. It's still a pretty relatively small organization. Mm-hmm. We have one conference a year. This next year, 2016, it is in L.A. I think it's April 17th and 18th. And there are different smaller organizations that get together more often. But that is our major conference. Next week, I'm going to Vancouver to a workshop that a lot of the ladies from New York City are coming to speak there. I know Amanda Cohen from Jerk Candy will be there giving a demonstration. Melissa Kelly, my friend, mm-hmm, from Maine, will be there. Elizabeth Faulkner. It will be a great conference. It's sold out, but hopefully everyone will come to our conference in LA.
So this is really embarrassing, but I wanted to share this with you. It's hilarious. And, you know, it's like, the world is small, don't date chefs, but Elizabeth Faulkner is introducing me to her brother. And he has a birthday party in LA on Friday. So
she was making she would tell me she was making his cake.
Yes. So that's hilarious. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you so much.
Lovely to catch up with you. And at the top of the show, we also had Raquel Pelzel, award-winning cookbook author on Everything Toast, about her new book called Toast. We're live 2 p.m. Eastern, Wednesdays on Word of Mouth, heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyti. Next week, we'll have live in studio Michael Anthony, 2015 James Beard Award winning best chef and chef partner of Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group's Untitled and Gramercy Tavern. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.